I can't keep my mic up. I get my mic to stand up, and then it just droops in the middle.
And we have a cold open, ladies and gentlemen.
When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Collected Edition, a comic book podcast where we discuss the famous and infamous runs and story arcs throughout the history of comics. I'm Paul Matthew Carr, and with me, as always, is Brian Reese.
Hey, Paul.
Hi. Boy, it's been a while since we did this.
It has. Who are you again?
No, it's good. It's good to be back on the mic again, as they say.
Is that what they call it?
In some circles. Today on the program, behold, a podcast. Yes, we will be discussing the 2016 series, The Vision, written by Tom King with art by Gabriel Hernandez Walta. But before we do, there's something going on in the world of comics that we would like to discuss. Basically, we're just going to riff a bit on the new Elseworlds crossover that's going to go on the CW. Is it the Arrowverse or the Flarrowverse?
I think they still call it the Arrowverse.
The Arrowverse.
Arrowvoice.
Yeah, well, wow. he was the first.
He was the first.
Yes.
I don't even know. Is that the most popular of the ones?
I'm pretty sure Flash is the most popular.
I would think so as well, but Supergirl. Green Arrow is the one I don't watch, so it's.
I watch Arrow to keep up with all the connections to the other shows.
Right.
Because I'm a completist. It's not because I want to watch it. It's because I feel I need to.
Well, it's not even a statement of quality. It's just I didn't watch it when it started. And by the time then The Flash came along and the others, so I started watching those. I was like, well, I don't have time to watch, two episodes of Green Arrow plus whatever's currently going on. So I was like, I'll just watch it during the crossovers.
Yeah.
I mean, which actually, oh, go ahead.
No, you can do that totally. You don't have to watch the show.
Right.
My personal OCD aside, you don't have to watch those shows. I did watch when it first started. I watched the first couple of seasons and I thought, it's not bad. But I sort of lost it. But then again, like you said, when Flash started and when Legends of Tomorrow started, I felt I needed to get caught up with everything.
And then Supergirl, and then now Black Lightning.
Yeah, I know. Black Lightning's not in that universe.
That's out of continuity, right? I mean, that's not part of Arrowverse.
I don't think it is yet.
Right.
There's a good possibility that it will be because that's what this whole. Crossover is going to be this year. It's a 3-episode crossover that will have episodes on Flash, Supergirl, and Arrow, and it's an Elseworlds story. So they go into I don't know how it's going to work exactly, but they're going to go into different dimensions or different worlds and see different versions of all these superheroes. So far, they've released pictures of Oliver Queen in a Flash outfit.
Okay,
which the beard sticking out is. Interesting.
Oh, I was about to say, how could you tell? But yes, okay, the beard.
Right. Yeah, and it has Barry Allen as the Arrow, Green Arrow, and there's going to be a Superman in a black suit.
Never bodes well.
It might be. And no report yet if there's going to be a mullet on the Superman. Which, I'm crossing my fingers. I want black suit and mullet.
Well, is the underwear on the outside?
Oh God, I hope so.
That would be visually odd—a black suit with the red underpants. I'm sorry, the wrestling trunks.
But wouldn't it be black on black, so you really couldn't tell? Or was it silver trunks? Silver trunks on black.
Ooh, silver trunks. Well,
that'd be nice.
Silver bells, silver trunks. Yeah. Christmas is coming.
My favorite thing of the pictures released so far is John Wesley Shipp in his old. Muscle suit from the 90s Flash series, which, by the way, if you haven't seen that is a very underrated TV series, and that not many people talk about it, but it's very good. It's very 90s, But it's very good at the same time.
The 90s were a difficult decade for many.
It was the same, I don't know if it was the same production company or the same creative team that did Batman the Animated Series.
Okay. I thought you were going to say Manimal for some reason, which...
Well, if you're talking about another classic television series. Whew, Manimal.
Manimal.
No.
Too bad it wasn't Manimal Man, because that just would have... I might have watched it. Carry on.
He became a lounge singer. He was Barry Manimal for a while. But stay on target.
Stay on target. Stay on target.
Stay on target.
The real big thing that's going to happen in this Elseworlds crossover is the introduction of Batwoman. Batwoman will be spun off into her own series next year. I am very, very interested in how they are going to do that, since there's not a Batman in the Arrowverse right now. And Batwoman's shtick is that she's kind of emulating Batman.
Right.
You know, I'm sure they could just do a different origin story. And
they, you know, well, does Batman not exist, or is he just not? Don't they reference, the Justice League?
Well, no, it was the Justice Society.
Oh, Justice Society. But there's some, I feel like there's reference to other superheroes that I've heard in, you know, the Arrow, I guess we'll call it the Arrowverse for ease. I feel like, have they not acknowledged other superheroes out there? I mean, Supergirl does. Supergirl, because you have Superman. But she's on an alternate Earth, right? She's an alternate dimension.
I'm thinking that Batwoman will be the same thing in her own, you know, in her own, on her own Earth, or maybe on the Superwoman, Supergirl Earth.
Which would make sense. A little bit. I mean, it wouldn't have to be that, because if they're doing Elseworlds, I mean, they're going to play with the multiverse, I would imagine, quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. I think they're I mean, it looks as if everything I've seen from it looks as if they're just going to go to town and just, you know, balls to the wall and have fun with this thing, which is one of the reasons I really like the Arrowverse, is they're not afraid to just go crazy comics.
Yeah. And I think we've talked about this before in previous podcasts, but like Legends of Tomorrow is perhaps the greatest of them all.
It really is wonderful.
in just their level of, we don't really give a shit. like we're just going to do the goofiest, craziest, most batshit crazy stuff we can think of.
There was an episode in the previous season, last season, with a giant blue bear.
Right, Bebo. Bebo, yeah. Fighting the dragon, right?
Yes.
Yeah. The demon or whatever, yeah.
I just remember watching that going, get out of, this is insane. Am I tripping right now?
But it was really smart, because they developed Bebo as...
Throughout the entire season, yes.
Throughout the entire season, peripherally, or like actually Bebo the stuffed animal had played like some important parts in the narrative going forward, but just as like that silly stuffed animal. And people sitting there watching, it's like, what's the deal with this stupid, like, Care Bear looking thing?
But it played an important role. I mean, way to have, you know, way to have foreshadowing and callbacks. It's great.
People.
Yeah. So now this year they have Constantine, and that's just wonderful.
Right.
There's a lot of things that could be done with John Constantine. Yeah, I gotta say, the CW is killing it with their comic book shows. They're not trying to get too ultra serious. They're not trying to, well, Arrow sort of does, but overall, they're just really sticking to comic book concepts, and they're not afraid to play with it. It's really great.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Flash has lost some of its it's lost some of its lightness. It's been very serious and kind of doom laden over the past couple seasons. And it seems
this seems with the first two episodes this year that they're trying to get back to that.
Right.
Yeah.
Because like last year, I would like to see the Flash not dedicate an entire season to one villain or one major villain, which they've done over the past several seasons. And, you know, it's the villains aren't always that compelling. Like the Thinker was not really that compelling a villain last year.
No,
to justify the entire season. And Cicada is even less, like in this season, Cicada is even less compelling.
Well, I got to admit, Cicada is far more compelling on the TV show than he ever was in the comics.
Yeah.
So
it's also dedicating an entire season to a villain named Cicada.
Yeah, you know. he buries himself every, it comes out every 5 years.
Yes, but it
that does seem like they're trying to get a little bit lighter with the introduction of the daughter and
right. And of course, you know, the one thing Flash does great is to keep Tom Cavanaugh? Is that the Harrison Wells? It's every season they find a new way to bring him back, which is great.
And, yeah, I know. They're like, so what accent do you want to do this year?
Exactly. And, you know, of course, he just chews the scenery, which is fine.
Yeah.
It's what you want his character to do. So, and of course, Ralph Dibny, I love. Oh, yeah. Every, you know, I've always loved the Elongated Man. I've always loved Ralph Dibny. I'm just waiting for him to meet Sue. They have to have him meet Sue at some point.
At some point, I kind of like him being the lonely guy right now. So they should don't do it.
Well, they could, but you know, it's like he could meet somebody named Sue. You know, even if it's a boy named Sue.
It could be a boy named Sue. I was just thinking that. But yes. So anyway, this Elseworlds crossover does look like a hell of a lot of fun, and it's. It's becoming kind of a tradition now. I look forward to it. Yeah.
I look forward to it.
Yeah.
This will be is this the third year of crossovers?
Yes. Because last year was Invasion, and then the year before that was something else.
Right. But kind of minor.
No. The first one was Invasion, and then last year was Nazi.
Oh, right. It was the Nazis. When in doubt, bring in the Nazis. I was going to say, who likes the Nazis? But I need to take that back. There clearly are many people who currently do.
Yeah, who would have saw that comeback happening?
Yeah.
So. Unfortunately.
But no, I mean, I love the shows. It looks fun. It's always fun. I think you get the sort of chattering class that is going to want to be overly serious about it. And, you know, you got the Cheeto guy sitting there, like, getting overly cranky about continuity or something like that. And it's like, yeah, you know, settle down, Beavis. These shows are basically just for fun.
Yes. And the brilliance with Flash is at any time he can go back in time and change the continuity.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, once you throw in time travel, you can pretty much do anything you want. Just ask Doctor Who.
Just ask Doctor Who.
Which, by the way, kids, watch Jodie Whittaker. She's awesome.
Okay.
Just saying.
Thank you for that. Glad you could get that plug in.
It's the best show ever created in the history of the world. So,
oh my.
Are you
standing by that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes, 100%. It's my favorite show ever in the history of the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's no Manimal.
It is no Manimal.
And I think we should at least, going forward, try to work Manimal in at least twice every...
Maybe. Is there a Manimal comic? A Manimal adaptation?
We should probably... You know, I have to admit this. I do not know. We should find that out. And
there's probably some kind of, like, Manimal meets the Bionic Man or something.
With Sasquatch or whatever.
Yeah. Sasquatch. But yes, CW shows are fantastic. And since, you know, all the Marvel shows are going down the drain, they're going to be our last bastion of comic book. Because there's no other comic book TV shows on at the moment. I'm being sarcastic. There's so many. Right.
Well, there really aren't a ton anymore because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is ending. I think Gotham is wrapping up this. I think it's going to be back for like a shortened run to tie everything up.
Yeah. No, but there's Gifted, Legion... Lucifer's going to come back to Netflix. There's Runaways, Cloak and Dagger.
Yeah, a lot of those are streaming, though, right?
Yeah. Well, streaming is the new TV.
Streaming is the new TV. That's true. Yeah. But and Daredevil just dropped this weekend, right?
I think it was last weekend. I haven't gotten to it. When those Netflix shows would drop, I would marathon them. And now I'm just sort of spacing it out.
I watched the first half of Iron Fist and just decided, and then I heard it was getting canceled and I was like, you know what? It wasn't that great to begin with and now it's getting canceled. There's no compelling reason for me to finish this show.
Season 2 wasn't bad. Season 2 should have been season 1, you know, because it was much better. And they left it at a very interesting point. I guess I'm not going to spoil it, but
You can for me.
Okay, so they got into they got into the Matt Fraction run. That was the idea. So it became very, very interesting. I was excited to see a season three and see if they could improve even more. But you know what? Screw it. Just scrap it. Maybe start over again with the Disney streaming service.
Yeah, and that's what I wonder is if some of these will return in some form or another on the Disney streaming and whether they're just canceled for Netflix. I mean, I get like some of them not carrying forward, but...
But it is a shame because Luke Cage was good.
Yeah.
And Mike Coulter is a great Luke Cage. I would love to see him come back as that character.
Yeah. I mean, I thought my favorites were Jessica Jones and Luke Cage were probably my two. You know, I like Daredevil a lot, but I also like Daredevil's one of my favorite characters. But I just really thought, especially like Luke Cage, where it was the blaxploitation elements that they really brought into it, was
the
really
music
great.
Was great. The look of it was great. It was a good show. Yeah, so. And they left it on such a cliffhanger. It's a shame they're not coming back.
We'll never know. It's sort of like being a comics fan and your favorite series gets canceled after 12 issues and you never know what happens to.
That's when you write your own fan fiction.
Oh yes, hooray fanfic. we should say fan fiction for a different podcast. But at some point we should address fan fiction.
Hey, you know, more power to them. Have fun.
Sure. Absolutely. Let the people have their voice.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not official canon or anything. It's just someone having some fun.
Yeah, sure. And luckily, in this day and age, anybody can write anything and self-publish it.
Yes. And shipping galore.
Yes.
On that note, should we take a break and then come back with a real comic?
I think we should.
Okay, let's do that. We'll be take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about The Vision.
All right.
This is an imaginary podcast, which may never have happened.
The Short Box Showcase.
But then again, may have. About a father and daughter. I'm Professor Allen.
And I'm Emily.
Who came from Ohio and talked about comics.
Identity Crisis.
Lone Wolf and Cub.
Hergé's Tintin.
White Tiger. It tells of their rise to glory, when the great guests were yet to be booked.
I didn't know this was going to be the Jimmy Olsen Hate Podcast.
It's always the Jimmy Olsen Hate Podcast.
And the great feats of editing not yet performed.
This is Ultraman, this is Ultra 7, this is Ultraman Jack, and this is Ultraman Taro, and this is Ultraman Leo, and this
of how they spoke at length. When I read a comic, story comes first and art comes second.
Continuity is really the brainchild of nitpicking nerds the world over.
Those are our people, Emily. And reviewed in brief tales that explore creatively the bounds of a given character's history.
Superman has basically the same relationship with Wonder Woman that he has with Batman.
Of brilliant creators before their fall from grace. This is the era where Miller is at the height of his creative and artistic powers. And the ability of strong writing to encapsulate and transcend its time.
Flash of Two Earths by Gardner Fox.
This is an imaginary podcast. Aren't they all? Shortbox Showcase is part of the Relatively Geeky family of podcasts. Check us out on the web at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com or search in iTunes for Relatively Geeky or Shortbox Showcase. And remember, we're not experts.
We're just family.
And we're back. Paul, today is your selection. What would you like to discuss today?
Well, we're going to talk about The Vision, Brian.
Oh, how convenient, since you said that not mere minutes ago.
It is true. Created in 1968 by writer Roy Thomas and artist John Buscema, The Vision was initially a villain. But as with many members of the Avengers, he soon redeemed himself and became a valued addition to the team. The Vision is a synthoid, a kind of living android, basically human in every way, except that his body is made of synthetic parts. Because of this, the Vision has become an easy metaphor, a stand-in for outsiders, and often used in stories about race and inequality and hatred. Yes, kids, there have been SJWs in comics for a long, long time. Despite all that, the Vision didn't really work well in solo stories. Other than a handful of short runs in limited series, the Vision remained primarily in a supporting role in teen books. For that reason, it was a bit of a surprise when it was announced that writer Tom King and artist Gabriel Hernandez-Walta were launching a limited solo series in 2016. But what resulted from that run is what I consider a modern classic. The art by Walta is stunning and beautiful, but the real heavy lifting was done by King. Tom King took the Vision and didn't so much reinvent the character, but rather reimagined him. Re-envisioned him, if you will. He took that core metaphor of the Vision as an outsider, gave him a family, then placed him in the suburbs and let the story evolve from there. So that setting of normalcy and the life that seems so common and bland on the surface is revealed to be filled with suspicion and prejudice and unexpected danger. And the more the Visions try to blend in and attempt to learn what it means to be normal, the abnormal is relentless and threatens to take over and destroy what they have tried to build. What results is duplicity and betrayal, love and tenderness, confusion, and moments of clarity. This is a well-crafted, meticulously told story that is funny and sad and horrific and triumphant. But most of all, it is beautiful in a way that only ordinary life can be. Brian, what did you think of the Vision?
Oh, well, there are, it is a comic book filled with many deep thoughts and deep ideas.
That is true. You don't sound very enthusiastic about it, though.
Oh, no, no. I'm not certain that all of them worked, but the ones that did certainly worked very, very, very well.
See, I'm fully on board on this. I don't think that there's one misstep in any of the issues. I was actually amazed. I read this when it was coming out. So I was getting it monthly.
Right.
Every month I was just, astounded by how well-crafted everything that is set up, everything. There is no detail in this story that is not paid off somewhere along the line, whether it's the vase or the lighter or the flower or reading Shakespeare.
And the Shakespeare thing I thought was very interesting, but then we'll talk about that in a bit. But yeah.
I was truly amazed at how well the story was told.
Well, and I have to admit, so I was reading it in trade.
Yeah.
I did not read it as it came out. I came too late, and so I decided, I'll just trade wait it. And of course, then it took them somewhere close to an eternity to get the trade, actually, the complete collected trade out due to a bunch of hilarious missteps and whatnot on Marvel's part.
Yeah, it's so very strange. Well, just letting Tom King go in the first place is a hilarious misstep by Marvel.
Yes, but either a great win for DC or some would say not, depending on I'm on the great win for DC, or I'm on the pro Tom King part of the portion of the spectrum, as it were. But I think one of the issues for me maybe was, and is often the case in some of these things, was buildup. So I spent 12 months as the Vision was coming out hearing all about how this is Marvel's Sandman and this is the greatest thing that Marvel has done in X plus years. So naturally I come in with extremely high expectations. Nothing wrong with that. And, I think a series, especially a series that's well done, like The Vision is, word of mouth certainly helps. And any chance you can, gin up interest in a story that is well-crafted mm-hmm. and interesting that not a lot of people are reading, you depend on that word of mouth. So you also run into the problem where word of mouth sometimes can create a thing.
It colors your expectations.
It creates an expectation that isn't necessarily fair to the piece itself.
Well, yeah, it's because I didn't have that, I didn't know what to expect. I liked the Vision because he was one of my favorites from the Avengers when I was growing up. So, of course I would just, that's why I gave it a chance. I hadn't really known Tom King as a writer. I mean, I had read his Omega Man series before this. Which was absolutely great. So I saw his name and said, oh, I really like that other thing. Let me get this. But I was not expecting this story.
Right.
I thought it was going to be just, you know, a silly Vision story as like they've told in the past. So I didn't have any expectations. It was just every month was, oh my God, this just keeps getting better. And I truly do believe, I mean, first of all, I'm on board with Tom King. I think he's one of the best writers in comics today. I think he's doing just outstanding work. Even Batman Wedding issues. I think he's doing outstanding work.
I feel like, yeah, I mean, that to me was a misstep, but how much of it was Tom King's misstep and how much of it was DC's misstep?
Exactly.
Right.
Neither here nor there, but I am really impressed with Marvel for letting him, and Walter for that matter, because he's, you know, Walter's a huge part of this as well. It wouldn't really work without his art. But I'm really impressed with Marvel for allowing this to happen. This was at a time when they were playing it very safe and they weren't making radical changes to their characters. So to have a storyline like this being told, where there are very, like you said, very deep ideas being expressed here.
Now, well, sure. And it's like we said, I mean, this is a big ideas comic.
Yeah.
It's also a small ideas comic as well. And I think sometimes the small ideas, my reading, the small ideas worked better than the big ideas.
Yeah. Ultimately, when it's just about relationships and family, that's when it works its best. I will jump ahead real quick to the end. I teared up when that ending happened. Virginia places her head on Vision's shoulder. That's really tender, touching moment and tragic beyond belief. It's incredibly.
Well, the whole
these are two is, androids. These all, are two androids. And, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the whole series is tragic. I mean, there's it starts off basically, you know, from the first issue when, you know, the tragedy is never far from the surface, and, you know, it's also foreshadowed. It's not even foreshadowed. He tells you outright.
Yeah, that's one of the things. He flat out just tells you what's going to happen.
Right. Was it George and Martha? I want to say George and Martha, but George and the couple that lives next door.
The couple next door, which is a very funny scene with they don't eat cookies.
Right.
She brings them cookies.
She's like, what? There's a limited amount of cookies in the world that you're going to suffer because we're giving them cookies.
Yes. But, you know, that, and then there's Victorious at the end.
Right.
Yeah, this is what's going to happen. But that's the thing. It's not the moment that's important. It's the emotional weight that carries you to that moment. That's what matters. That's what I find very impressive about how the story is written. The story itself is good, but it's the interpersonal relationships that surround those moments.
Right.
So, you know, and it's great that Tom King is just like, oh, and by the way, this person's going to die.
In 10 issues, this person's going to die a terrible death.
Yeah, but that's not really the issue. Right. Getting there is the point of that death.
Right.
And it's really amazing. There is a feeling, and this is conveyed not only in the writing, but in the art and the coloring as well. There's a feeling of dread and impending doom in every panel. It's so isolating and lonely.
And sort of cold and synthetic feeling.
Exactly.
See what I did there?
Yeah. And I love the fact that it has sort of a 1950s aesthetic to it, which is essentially a cold and synthetic worldview.
Right.
I might Chris Farley this a little bit, but there's nothing about this that I don't like. Now you can, you know, I love to hear counterpoints to this, but I'm mostly going to be very glowing.
Well, there's no reason not to be. And, you know, I mean, it's any quibbles I have, we can either hit or not hit as the discussion carries forward. I think it's a very, very, very good comic. So, you know, I don't have a strong argument. I have no argument against it as far as that goes. You know, I'm not entirely certain it hit every note pitch perfect, but if we hit those points, we'll talk about it. If we don't hit those points, that's not important in the overall scheme of how good the comic is.
Well, one more point on the structure or the storytelling. It's just sort of it's a minor point, but I think I found it fascinating. One of the amazing things was the way in which Tom King was able to incorporate the mythology of the Vision while at the same time staying true to its continuity while at the same time making it a new story. Because, you know, it's a stupendous feat of comic book gymnastics to incorporate 50 years of very eclectic storytelling into something coherent and new And it never felt like he was betraying the past or scrapping it in favor of something else. He actually worked in all those various storylines with Wonder Man and the Scarlet Witch losing her children or imaginary children. Really.
And really him incredible. saving the Earth 37 times.
37 times. Which right. That was that right there is a brilliant scene. You know, it's a police interrogation scene. And as the interrogation is going on, it's a very straightforward two men at a table talking back and forth with a narration over top of it, just mentioning all the things, all the people he defeated and saved the
right. Ultron again. And the fact that 37 is actually arbitrary, and he even yeah. says it's arbitrary, and so he comes up with 37 times. But it, you know, there's a point where he says, you know, it's more than 37. But he was like, I just, you know, the Vision says I just came up with that number.
Well, they were the ones that were most important to him, which
right.
I find interesting.
Or the ones in which he was primary to the salvation of the world or what have you.
Yeah. But also, you know, that gets into the greater themes of the book. Your actions have consequences because it mentions, well, he started the West Coast Avengers. So does he get credit for every time the West Coast Avengers
save right.
So, you know, how far do you take your actions? I have done something which then causes a ripple effect. Am I responsible for something far away? Vision created his family. His wife did something horrible. Is he to be blamed for that? And that these are very deep moral questions.
Well, and the fact that, you know, his wife, Virginia, even brings up when the Vision is going to kill Victor. And, you know, she's saying, you know, if he succeeds, then he'll be a criminal and will be, you know, she talks about, you know, if he succeeds, we'll be a criminal. And then she, meaning Virginia, Vin, and Viv, the two children, will be deemed as, you know,
untrustworthy
and threats. And if he doesn't succeed, they will still be viewed as untrustworthy and threats.
Yeah.
And she's viewing all of this through the actions of Vision instead of through their own actions or her actions, which are in essence the catalyst for all of these bad things that happen going forward. But as his creation, does she have free will? Does she have thought? Is there any, you know, and of course, if I'm getting ahead of ourselves, stop me, but is she Wanda? Is she the Scarlet Witch?
Is Vision Wonder Man?
Right.
You know, these are questions. Who are we really? This gets down into that whole nature versus nurture argument, because Vision gave them memories. It gave them personalities, but they're allowed to grow and experience things. So,
but he's based enough of, I mean, Vision's kind of a dick.
Yeah, a little bit.
You know, it's the fact that he has buried Wanda Petroff's memories. He's basing Vivian on Wanda Petroff, the Scarlet Witch, and he has buried her memories in Virginia.
To the point where she feels depressed and doesn't know why.
There's those whole scenes where she just sits, right? And there's the great scene where, you know, it talks about she just sits there and she has all these memories like deep in her memory banks that make her sad. And then he keeps that stinking Everbloom tree around, right? Which was the gift from the Scarlet Witch.
Yeah, it was a wedding gift for them, wasn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
You know, that's part of that.
But then she uses the metaphor of the piano, that she has downloaded everything. She has downloaded how to play the piano, and she knows all the music. But knowing the music is not the same as playing the music.
Playing the music, right.
So she...
Merrily.
Yeah.
Life is so but a dream.
She can mimic it perfectly, but it's not real.
Right.
So it's the same thing with her memories of Wanda. She can mimic them perfectly, but they're not real. She has to, you know, she has to practice and find her own way.
But the fact that she can't overcome that, and
well, that's part of the tragedy. That's the tragedy of this
thing. It's definitely part of the tragedy. You know, the other part of the tragedy is that she is glitching badly. I remember the first time I read it. At first, I thought there was a typo. Where she was, you know, there was like, she repeated, I think, the or something, you know, she repeated two words and I was like, oh, that's a typo. How did that get passed? And of course, later on, as she continues to glitch even worse and is just like repeating words, But, you know, again, keeping with the Vision is kind of a dick. He doesn't fix her. He doesn't attempt to fix her. He has to be aware that
they all seem aware of it.
Programming issues.
You know, and this gets into sort of a, you know, an idea of an abusive household. Maybe not an abusive household. That's not what it is. But there's
right,
something.
It's not physically, you know.
Yeah, there's something wrong, but no one's there. No one will acknowledge it. No one will say right. What's going on. And they just pretend everything's the same.
Right. Or they don't have the ability to acknowledge it.
Or they feel that if they acknowledge it, something might be wrong with them as well. There's many, many levels of this. Yeah. So we're 20 minutes into this. We should probably talk about a little bit about the storyline itself,
sure.
Which is the Vision, synthoid android creature, decides to create himself a family and move to the suburbs and have a normal life. He wants to be a Pinocchio. He wants to be a real boy.
Right.
And of course, and then that's where the first obvious metaphor comes in, which is there are others and outsiders coming into a suburban world and their neighbors aren't all happy with it.
Well, and there it's the very generic picket fence world.
Yes. It's that 1950s aesthetic.
Right.
Yeah.
Very, very white, very suburban.
And that's on purpose.
Right.
Trying to blend in and deal and be normal to the outside world. Of course, they're not normal and strange things begin to happen.
Right.
So a murder is committed. And here's the thing. This is the fear that happens. You know, so Grim Reaper, who is the brother of Wonder Man, this is where it gets real comic books obsessed, continuity obsessed. Grim
right.
Reaper, who is the brother of Wonder Man, and Wonder Man's memories are in the Vision.
Well, yeah, because Simon Williams' memories were used by Ultron to create the Vision, and the Grim Reaper is the brother of Simon, yeah.
So, you know, so that's a little bit of a deep dive into continuity, but you can get past that. So he breaks in, very upset that this family has been created with stealing his family's memories. Grim Reaper feels that his family has been wronged by the Vision creating this family, and stabs Vivian. That was a very gruesome scene.
And it's also shocking. It's properly shocking within context because everything has been set up to be this idyllic world. And what you think you're going to get is, as you kind of alluded to in your intro, is sort of the humorous and hilarious adventures of the Vision family in suburbia and all the wacky misunderstandings that are going to happen to them, you know, living in you. That's not what you get.
Yeah. I thought when I first picked this up, with knowing nothing about the comic, I thought it was going to be the Beverly Hillbillies. You know, all the here are these crazy androids coming into the rich people's area, and like you said, wacky antics ensue.
Fish out of water.
Yes, fish out of water. That's what I thought it was going to be. And then suddenly, there's a scythe. That was awful. And of course, Virginia rightfully tries to protect her children and kills the Grim Reaper.
Right.
See, but here's the, you know, had she, and of course, there wouldn't be a story if she had just gone to the authorities and said, hey, this guy broke in.
Yeah.
And I just was defending myself.
Right. In most communities under current law, everything she did was justifiable. Whether one personally feels, morally feels that what she did was justifiable or not, the law as it's set up, is on her side. There was an invasion in her home. Her child was killed. She was fearful for her life and her other child's life.
Right.
And she acted in a manner that ended that threat permanently.
Yes, yes. But she panics and she tries to hide the body. Would have gotten away with it if it weren't for those darn kids. So because of this really horrible tragedy and the lies that are told in order to cover that up, and then, of course, more lies need to be told to cover up those lies. It sort of spirals into this really bad situation for that family.
But all of that base due to the fear of the other.
Yes.
Right. It's the other has fear, and they are fearful that others have fear of the other. It's layered. It's a layered level of otherness and fear.
Yes. Well, they fear that because of who they are and what they are, they will be seen, they won't be taken at face value. So
right.
Yes, it was self-defense. At the same time, they fear that that's not how it will be perceived by the normal people.
The authorities and the normal people, right. That's also problematic because, as is pointed out a lot in the comic, it's the Vision. He is a member of the Avengers. He's on the President's Council.
But he was also, he was created by a villain to be a villain. And they're right. always afraid, will that just come back? Is he a good person or is he just programming? Which brings us to another metaphor of the story. Who are we? Are we just programmed to go throughout our lives? We think we have free will. We think we're doing things by our own volition. But at the same time, are we just programmed to go through these motions?
Right. And, you know, it's the whole, what is humanity? And it's one of my favorite quotes in the comic, and it's actually a great quote, which sort of falls into that when Vision says, you know, to assert as truth that which has no meaning is the core mission of humanity.
Yes.
And I had to read that several times over. But, you know, I mean, that suggests, and also that and the P versus NP idea.
I knew that vaguely from working with computers, but I still had to say, you know what, I'm going to look that up. And I had to, so I did look that up as a concept.
Right.
Tom King's working hard in this.
Yes.
Yes.
And it is, not to get too far, we're talking about humanity and stuff, but it does point out, like, because I read it in trade, I had the intro. And so the person who wrote the intro brought up the fact that because it's a monthly comic, this isn't TV where you can film and erase, and it's not film where you can go back. It's once an issue comes out, you can't go back and correct it. And so they talked about how every piece, like every setup, had to be thought out long before. And you know, this goes to your talk about the structuring of it. It's like every little idea and every little mention had to be set up long in advance with the long view.
Yeah. I mean, it is meticulous. The fact that in that very first issue, they basically throw all your Chekhov guns at you. Here's a vase that you can't fill with water because the water would become poisonous. Here's a vibranium lighter that Captain America once owned.
The stringless Steinway.
The stringless Steinway, the flowers that allow you to see the future if you do it the right way. Yeah. So, I mean, all of this is just thrown out there, and it seems like they could just be little neat details to show you how strange this family is. Every single one of those things is meaningful and has a point.
Well, and it's the most important thing being the water vase of Zen La. And, you know, it's, they talk about the woman's dying thought was, you know, why didn't it have water in it? And of course, then explains that, well, it doesn't have water in it because you can't put water in it. And that follows with, why would such a thing then be created at all? And that's the Vision. And that's his family.
Exactly. What is the purpose of this? And that is ultimately, we can talk about all the different metaphors and themes throughout this, but ultimately is why do we exist? Why were we created? You know, is it just aesthetic? Are we just beautiful things to walk through this earth? Is there a purpose? And there is no answer to it. And that's every line, every panel has something along those lines in it, or something along that theme. And that's why it's so, and that's why there's that feeling of dread. I don't know if you got that, but reading.
Oh, no, it's there. It becomes an almost uncomfortable read.
Yeah.
And by a comfortable, I don't mean bad. Like, it's compelling. You can't put it down. It's like watching, you know, a horror film. It's not the comic isn't a horror comic, at least not in the traditional tropes of horror. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when the person is running from, you know, the monster, or when you know they're about to be attacked and the camera does its tricky things where, you know, you're like, why is that person not looking behind them? It's like,
right.
But you can't stop watching. And in this, you can't stop reading. You're like, it's like, oh my God, this is just going to be bad.
Yeah. And even in the times,
even
in the moments when it's happy, because there are good things that happen in this. There are times when they have that myth of a perfect life.
Right.
Where they think, you know, we're doing everything right and everything is as it should be, but there's still that gnawing feeling just below the surface that this isn't right. And something bad is going to happen.
Well, and some of that's, you know, the coloring. You know, colorists don't get a lot of the attention they deserve. And I believe it's just Walter doing his own coloring, right?
No, actually it's Jordi Belair.
Oh, it is Jordi Belair. Of course, yeah. It's Jordi Belair. Duh. Who else could it be?
Yeah. Yeah, the colors in here, they're vibrant, but they're eerie.
You know, there's always like darkness at the edge of the panels.
Right. It's just a little dark and dirty.
In the background. And you know, I mean, the Vision himself is very colorful. It's the greens and the reds. And, you know, it creates his family the same way. And the dog is, you know, these are like neon, almost happy, popping colors. But then everything behind them and everything around them, there's these shadows and this dread. Yeah, you're right.
There's just that uneasiness. And even that green of their skin, their green, is sickly in a way, you know. And as the story progresses, that vibrancy kind of mutes more and more. So it's, you know, there's some sickness there, you know, as the family becomes more and more sick, as they begin to glitch.
Right.
You know, that coloring becomes more disease ridden. But it still looks good, which is a tough thing to do,
right? Yes.
Yeah. And Walter's art itself, I mean, it's very cartoonish, but it has such great detail and expression. It adds to that unreality that is going on in this story, because or surreality, I guess I should say, because everything's real, but it's not quite right. It's very, very well done. I mean, I can't say that enough. Part of the thing I was just mentioning was that myth of the perfect life, where it's a perfect life that does not and will never exist, and yet even in real life, people try to put a veneer over everything that says everything's great, everything's just fine, we're all normal. But families are messy; they're not perfect. At the same time, that doesn't mean you don't stop trying to make it better. You don't try to stop protecting that family.
Right,
and it's And so as this story progresses and more terrible things are happening and that perfect life is shattered.
Well, and it's almost like the Vision, he doesn't understand. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, but that protectiveness, he finally understands what it means. It's not just going through the motions and sitting at the dinner table every night and talking about your day. There's much more to it than that. And unfortunately, he realizes that at the very end when it's far too late.
But it's to me, the interesting thing is, like, he thinks he can create this perfect family. Like, that is his intent. That's what he set out to do. And it's his, even after having been in a relationship with a human in the Scarlet Witch, having children, as it were, having been surrounded by humans all of his existence, he still, the arrogance that he has, that he will create a family that will be the same as his human counterparts, but his assumption that it will be different in that he cannot anticipate all of the problems that are inherent within, like, having human relationships.
Right. Well, he, you know, that's the recurring line throughout the entire story is, I'll fix it. I can fix it.
Right.
And if I can't fix it,
he thinks that, yeah, it's hubris.
Exactly. And in the end, what does he do? He comes full circle and he tries, and you see him trying to fix Virginia again. He's starting all over. The cycle continues. Hasn't really learned anything.
Right.
Unfortunately.
And, you know, I mean, thankfully the dog is still...
Oh, I was mad when the dog died.
Well, the book is brutal to animals in general.
Oh, yeah.
Which I'm never a fan of.
Yeah, I was okay when the cat died. That's fine.
But don't... Who are you?
I kid, Brian. I kid. Of course I don't. I'm kidding.
The cat look like my cat.
No, but oh, my goodness. Well, first of all, when the neighbor's dog dies, that was just horrible.
Yeah, and I'm like, seriously? You know, and then of course, you know, they revive, you know, it's the few moments of what I felt was like humanity was the Vision then, you know, operating the dog, taking the brain out and putting the brain into, but at the same time, it wasn't really an act of humanity. It was like, he's the creator. He's Ultron.
Yeah. I'm going to fix this horrible situation by trying to put a patch on it.
Right.
You know? Obviously my family is broken. Here, let me get a dog. And, you know, that does work from time to time.
But he tries to, like, it's again, he's attempting to create life, you know, and the whole thing is problematic because the whole premise of the book is on him with, you know, the sort of God complex that he is going to create life, and this life is going to be in his image, literally.
He tries to create idealized life, not just life, but idealized life. But the moment he puts free will into those creatures, things start going badly. Yeah. Much like, you know, the real God, if you wanted to look at it that way.
You're right.
Yeah. So, I don't think that Vision is a dick. I think he's just, or at least he's not intentionally trying to be a dick. I think he just doesn't know. He wants to make things perfect and doesn't realize life is not perfect. You have to make the best out of the worst.
The fact that he hasn't learned this before this moment, just from observing humanity.
Well, maybe that's kind of the point where he has to make the mistakes himself. He can't just observe. It's like playing the piano. You can't just play the music. You have to feel the music.
You have to feel the music. And, you know, he's incapable of, like, there's, you know, they throw around like love. There's a scene where he tells, you know, Virginia that he loves her, and she's like, I love you. And you're like, do they, you know, did the Vision know love with the Scarlet Witch? Well, it was a different Vision, right?
Yeah, I mean that's another right. thing. You know, he has the same memories and he retains all those memories and feelings. Mm-hmm. He's just in a different body. So is it the same guy?
Yeah.
But I do think that, you know, they don't really realize that they love each other until that final moment when Virginia drinks from the vase.
Is it that he loves her or he notices the advent of absence?
Well, I think in her absence he realizes there was something. He misses something. He realizes what love is. He wants to know what love is.
He wants you to show him.
Exactly. But that, you know, that that moment at the end always gets me. May I rest my head on your shoulder? I would find it pleasing to rest my head on your shoulder.
Yes. And, you know, the question is, has she learned what love is, but has he? And maybe that's where it gets me. And it's because, again, like you said, like right at the very end, he's just right back making another one.
Yeah. Well, there's no answers. How many times have you learned a valuable life lesson and then gone around and just
done the same stupid thing?
Exactly. Over and over.
What time is it?
Exactly. There are no answers in this story. There's a lot of questions. There's a lot of things to think about. But Tom King is never going to give you an answer. I think that bothers people from time to time, but I love the ambiguity of it all.
Oh yeah, I shouldn't make it sound like, you know, it's that I'm against that, because I too appreciate the ambiguity of it. I'm curious with another Tom King project, which will inevitably be compared
yes.
to Vision, which is Mr. Miracle.
Very similar in many ways.
Very similar, but very different as well. But there mm-hmm. are some running themes, and I'm pretty sure we're not going to get the answers that we want out of Mr. Miracle as well. And I appreciate that Tom King can do a Vision and Miracle Man and can also do a Omega Man and Batman.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I think shows like a very intelligent and perceptive writing skill.
Like I said, I really think he's one of the best in comics right now. Really pushing what can be done and how things can be told. It's I love that. Comics should be good, and this is good.
Right. I feel like my problem is there's a ton more we could talk about.
Yeah.
But did we just kind of talk ourselves to the end?
I think we might have. Is there more that you want to say about this, or should we wrap it up?
Well, there's a million things we could talk about. That's the problem.
Well, unfortunately, this is a comic where there's so many different aspects of it that we could spend an entire episode talking about each theme, each idea, each metaphor.
Right. We could do like a, you know, 3-month podcast just on Vision.
Right. But I think what we're doing here is just giving an overview, some initial feelings, and right. basically saying, go out and read this.
Yeah.
You know, if you haven't read it, read it. Yes, we've done some spoiling, but Tom King spoils the entire story in the first two issues.
Yes.
It's fine. It's fine. Because it's not, like I said it before, it's not about, you know, the moments in the story. It's about the journey to get to those moments and the emotional weight that those moments bring.
Right.
So this is really something that is, I could tell someone the story, but this is really, you need to experience reading it to get the full, you know, the full experience, the full weight.
Yeah.
So I guess final thoughts would be, in the end, this is just a great, great comic.
It is a very, it is, yes, and I agree. It's a very good comic, and we didn't hit some of the quibbles, but I don't think my quibbles are really important overall in terms of, like, how good this comic is. And
yeah, but, you know, like I said in the beginning, this was a completely unexpected story for me. I do think, I mean, I'm not going to say this is Marvel's Sandman. That's, I hate stuff like that, but I do think this is a modern classic and one that will be remembered decades down the line. When people are looking back, you know, for classic comics, they're going to say The Vision from 2016.
Right. I agree.
All right. Well, that's it for our Vision talk. What are we going to do next time, Brian?
Next time, Paul, I thought we would take a look at Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., the 60s run, issues 1 through 18, with the legendary first five issues done by Jim Steranko.
Yes, Trippy Town.
So the focus will be, yes, the focus will be on the first five issues. And it's odd, I think we're having a run of Marvel here, so we need to change that up. And especially coming from me, I think I've had two Marvel recommendations in a row. But Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., the 60s, series, it was a short run, 18 issues. Steranko only did like the first five, but my goodness, is it, it's a heck of a journey.
Yes, it is. We're probably, you know, like you said, we'll probably focus on the Steranko stuff, but after that, it's Jack Kirby.
Kirby, right.
Who is so, also just greatness incarnate.
He could do some art himself.
Yeah. So that's really exciting. That's so much fun. I can't wait to revisit those. So I guess that's it, Brian.
Okay.
So everyone, thank you for listening. If you'd like to learn more about the show, please visit us online at collectededitionpodcast.com or follow us on the Twitters at collectededpod. That's collected ED pod. Brian and I are both there. I'm at Daddy Elk and Brian is
Big Rock Mountain.
There you go.
Yay, I remembered it this time.
Also, you can send us your comments. We'd love to hear your feedback and would like to start a dialogue with everyone. Send us an email at comments@collectededitionpodcast.com. Otherwise, I guess we'll see you next time. Until then, keep reading comics.
And be well.
You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy Elk production. All materials used on the show are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. The show can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, as well as online at collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes. You can also send us feedback at comments@collectededitionpodcast.com or on Twitter at collectededpod. That's collected, E-D-P-O-D. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.
Are you not entertained?